Good evening. Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children.
And welcome to another episode of the Slongcast, episode number 33.
It's the number on the back of the
Latrobe Brewing Rolling Rock bottles.
Really?
Yeah, 33, right?
I don't drink Rolling Rock.
I don't anymore either. I used to when I was stupid.
Wow. 33.
Yeah, 33.
Well, that, my friends, is Mr. Ryan Lancey.
Hey, how you doing?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm great.
Man in the box.
What?
You don't remember that?
No.
It's a Jimmy Fallon thing where he was a radio guy and he did these voices into different microphones. He'd be talking to him, oh, man in the box.
Man in the box.
Like four voices. Okay, so that didn't go over too well.
Sorry.
So anyways, it is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2011. And top story of the week is not a tech story. You probably guessed because of the intro to the show. But what do you think about that, Ryan? We finally got him.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, I guess. Well, no, I mean, it's great. It's great that I guess justice was done. Incidentally, I've seen a few people put a quote on Facebook from
Martin Luther King.
Yes, it's fake. That quote's fake. He did not ever say that, and you're trashing his name if you continue to post it.
Yeah, somebody that I just saw today posted the fake one and a link to the real one, and they're like, even if you think about the fake one, just click on the link and go read the real one so you know what he said.
Yeah, it was a mistake. So. Anyway.
So anyways, good deal. Way to go, Navy SEALs.
Yeah, Navy SEALs, that's cool.
Awesome.
We always like the Navy SEALs.
Yeah, we always like the military.
Can't say anything bad about the Navy SEALs or really the Army Rangers. Any of those guys.
Delta Force,
all of them, they're awesome.
Yeah. I always wanted
to
be
one of them. They make
video
games about you guys with good reason.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, here's where I'm going to put a technology spin on this. How long is it going to take until we have a Wolfenstein-type game for Osama?
Yeah, it's interesting. But, like, do you think you'll have, like, the Borg things on them, too? Like,
well, I don't know what they'll do with them, but...
Yeah.
I mean, like, on Chuck, I tweeted about this yesterday. I was watching the most recent episode of Chuck that aired last night, and they already had an Osama jab in there. They were talking about going somewhere, and Casey had these targets. He's like, oh, I hope they have a gun range. And he opened up these targets, and it was a picture of Osama's face.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, wow, did they re-record that scene, like, that night that it happened? Or did somebody just do some crafty editing to put that his face over top of the normal target?
It's interesting.
Like, I was just surprised that a TV show, you know, 8 hours after it happened, already had a jab in there.
It's interesting.
So let's get into some real tech. This one, our top story in the regular technology world, kind of threw me for a loop. Because as I was bookmarking stories for the show, I got this warning that...
Warning.
Will Robinson.
Danger Will. I was going to say that.
Your data will be, you know, gone if you don't authorize Delicious to migrate your bookmarks. Apparently, Yahoo finally found a buyer for the Delicious bookmarking system.
And they didn't tell anyone.
And they didn't tell anybody.
Like, Yeah,
it just magically happened. You know, there was no formal announcement. People found out when they logged into Delicious, and they're like, whoa, we're not us anymore.
Yeah, I like Delicious a lot. I wish it were more of a standard. I wish, like, browsers would just, like, support
integrate
it.
Integrate it, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. But, yeah, when I logged in, I was, like, on Facebook at the time, and I think I IM'd Kevin, and I was like, dude, did you log into Delicious today? And he's like, yeah. Of course he like knew before I did.
Well, it was only a couple hours before because I had logged in at work.
Yeah,
that was the only reason I knew.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently the founders of YouTube, Chad Hurley and Steve Chen, they have a new company called Avos, A-V-O-S,
mm-hmm.
or Avos.
What were they the founders of? YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Their new company, they bought Delicious. So... they didn't really say what they were going to do with it, did they? Like, I'm worried
Probably, make it a little bit better and sell it to Google for a lot of money.
Well, I'm hoping they don't ruin it. You know, I'm hoping this isn't one of those strategic buys where they steal the talent and kill the service, because that would suck.
I'd say ruining Delicious would be a lot like ruining, like, I don't know.
Ice cream.
You'd have to be really work hard at it.
Yeah.
Or just sugar. Like, sugar's awesome.
That's true. In anything.
Yeah, and you just add sugar, it tastes better.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, so, like, yeah, Delicious and it's better. So, like, don't screw it up, guys.
Yeah, I mean, of all the bookmarking services, you know, Yahoo tried to make their own competing bookmarking service. That failed. Everybody who comes out with a bookmarking service, it fails. Like, Delicious is the standard.
Yeah, I mean, Google's is okay.
Wait, Google has a bookmarking service?
Yeah.
What is that? I've never heard of it.
Google.com/bookmarks? I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't
see, I've been using it for years. Actually, I used that before Delicious, but when I really lost interest in it, I shouldn't say I've lost interest in it. When I was like, okay, it's not the best thing ever, is when they didn't make it sync with Chrome.
That was which is kind of funny.
Because Chrome has its own set of like bookmarking syncing utilities, but it will not sync with Google Bookmarks. I'm like, you guys are idiots. You already had a bookmarking service. Now you have another one that's not compatible with it.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh, you just download your bookmarks and reload them into Chrome. It's like, yeah, well, I just want it to sync everywhere. How about that?
Yeah, I just had to teach somebody at work how to get their bookmarks out of a version of Firefox because it was broken. We had to uninstall and reinstall, you know, export to a JSON file and re-import, and they try to get them into Internet Explorer. They're like, I exported my bookmarks. Why can't it come into Internet Explorer? And I had to explain, no, every browser uses a different type of file. You can't just import and export willy-nilly. Like, that's not how
HTML's,
it works.
Yeah, HTML's, like, most browsers support HTML export, right?
Yeah, Firefox, it used to be default HTML export. Now it's default JSON, JavaScript.
Oh.
And Internet Explorer does not.
What the heck?
It's
you know why they do that? Probably is for bookmarklets, I bet.
Well, it's JavaScript object notation, so it's object-oriented notation of your bookmarks.
Oh. I was thinking maybe like if you had a bookmarklet.
That would make sense.
It would only be supported in the Java version.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Anyway.
Yeah, either way. Don't screw up Delicious, please.
We love it.
Everybody loves it.
It's so delicious, like ice cream
mm-hmm.
and sugar.
Mm-hmm. Good. Sorry, Campbell's. Do not sue us.
That's Pillsbury, isn't it? Oh, no.
I thought that was Campbell's soup.
You're right.
Yeah, Pillsbury is.
Yeah.
Actually, that kind of sounded like a little Mario. Anyways, I can.
You can, Kevin. You can.
That's going to be my slogan for 2012. I can. So I can. Takes a step in what I believe is the right direction. A lot of companies seem to be going this way. They hire what people normally think of as bad guys to be the head of their security department. Just recently, ICANN hired Jeff Moss. He was the founder of the Black Hat and DEF CON conferences as the chief security officer. So this dude now has a C-level position within ICANN. So he is basically the security guy for the internet. So what do you think of...
I'd say good move. I mean, this guy knows all the holes. He knows the problems. He probably even has some stuff in his like back pocket.
I'm sure, yeah.
That he hasn't even told anyone about. You know, because if you're like an awesome hacker, you're going to like... You're probably going to hold some stuff back.
Oh, all hackers do that, yeah.
I mean, why would you give away your... It's like playing poker. It's like, oh, I'm just going to... Yeah, I won, but here's what I had in my hand.
Right, you never show.
Yeah, you never show. Got to pay to see the cards, bitch.
Yeah, that's especially the case in the jailbreak scene. You know, they never release a new jailbreak just because they can if the jailbreak for the older version also works, you know, if it still works.
Yeah.
So, like, they have three or four exploits for a jailbreak in their pocket, and they just keep using the same ones because Apple doesn't patch them.
Yeah.
Or the same with other companies. So, yeah, I'm sure this guy, you know, especially being the founder of Black Hat and DEF CON, you don't become such a notorious... I was going to say notoriable, but that's not a word. You don't become such a notorious person in the security industry if you're not good. So
right.
I can't hiring this guy. I'm hoping that the whole DNS security thing finally gets fixed once and for all. I'm hoping that... What do you think they're going to use him for? You know, do you think his job is going to be like not attacking people, but... going after, like, forensics work, going after people who attack the core of the internet, or is he going to be more of a policy guy? Like, I think he's going to be a hands-on guy.
Well, I mean, I think ICANN's more policy than anything else.
Yeah. But they really are the only company who has say of the internet. You know, if you think of it, who else?
Yeah, they're kind of a weird company too. Like they have like some kind of like government control or oversight.
Yeah, like who else has control to make rules about the internet?
Maybe he is a total like, you know, sleeper and he's going to like wreck the internet.
Dude, if that happens, my life is on the internet.
If I go home and I log on to my Verizon and there's no internet, I'll be so pissed.
I will be very mad.
I'll be like, I want all my money back from the last 10 years.
Anonymous will come after you, Jeff Moss. Although we already found out that they're not so good in real life with the in-store Sony protests. So if he takes down the internet, maybe he'll be okay.
Yeah.
So anyways, good job, ICANN. Use his skills well. I believe you have the next story, Ryan, about some GPS stuff.
Yeah, so I saw this on, I think I saw it on Reddit. It actually linked to Engadget. There's a story about TomTom, the company you know that makes GPSs and
not Susu.
TomTom. Yes, what?
Do you remember those commercials?
No.
The dude's driving with his wife in the car, and he's like, Susu, where do I turn? Susu, is this the building up on the left? And at the end, it's like, it's TomTom, not Susu.
No, I don't remember that. Well, anyway, they apparently they've been selling user data to the Dutch police.
Yeah!
And the Dutch police are in turn using that data to set up ideal locations for speed traps. So I don't know exactly what they're selling to them. It may be just the data, like, you know, where there's a lot of cars. But more than likely, I mean, they have the ability to determine your speed via GPS.
I was going
to
say, my guess is that they're selling GPS pinpoints of places where the most occurrences of over 65 happen or something like
that.
Well,
they might just be selling the raw data to them and letting them mine it for the you know, the peaks in the data or whatever.
But, right.
You know, they said that there's an update there saying they issued a statement saying, oh, it's collected anonymously, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not the point. The point is, you're aiding, like, you're telling them where to, like, hunt your users down. Like, this should make TomTom users really mad. Because
this should make TomTom users throw it away.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, in order for them to get this data, you have to link your TomTom back to your computer and, like, then upload the data somehow to the internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, that's the only way they're going to get the data.
I didn't know if, like, the thing had a 3G chip in it or something and it was sending data back live.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I know my fiance has a TomTom and it comes with software on the computer mainly to, like, update it with, like, map updates and stuff. But I think it also would, like, sync data between the device. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't remember ever reading anything that said, oh, we're going to report your speeding data back to the police.
It was probably one of the fine text things.
Yeah, plus, you know, we're U.S. customers, not Dutch. But nonetheless, if they're doing this in where is Dutch? Netherlands? If they're doing this in the Netherlands.
Holland.
Holland? Is that a country?
Isn't Holland the Netherlands? Aren't they the same thing?
Oh, maybe. Anyway, wherever Dutch people live, if they're doing it to the police for the Dutch people.
Yes, Holland, the Netherlands, the Dutch, all the same thing.
Okay, they're probably, I wouldn't put it past them to do it for the United States. I mean, I think it's crap. This is like, in my opinion, this is worse than the whole iPhone thing.
Yeah.
Because this is like used against you. You're a paying customer and your data is being used against you.
Right. At least Apple is not using it against you to get you
not
speeding
yet.
Tickets.
Who knows, though? They could be. Think about it.
Oh, I'm sure they could. Of course they could. I don't think they will.
If they're taking positional information, they could totally like see when your phone is moving faster than 65 miles an hour on a highway in PA. That's the speed limit here. You know, and then just give all that data to the police and let them mine it.
And here's the thing about that too, it might still be the only GPS real turn-by-turn GPS app on the iPhone is the TomTom app.
Oh, really? There's no Navigon anymore?
I don't know. TomTom was the first. I'm not sure if it's still the only, but that was like the one that people got if they wanted turn-by-turn on the iPhone.
Navigon's so much better.
It wouldn't surprise me if they were also doing that, because, I mean, like you said, the data's there on the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, all you need is positional data with time, and you can determine speed.
Yep.
As long as the positional data is, you know, accurate enough.
Right. You get 2 or 3 points and correlate the time it took to get there. Done.
But even still, like if there were 2 points that were like along a highway, And they, you know, the speed between the 2 points, you determine it to be, you know, even if it wasn't like on the highway, even if they're just 2 points, say 10 miles apart, and they happen so fast that there's really no way that you could have done it other than being in a car. Like, say there's like no trains or buses near there.
Right.
Well, there's always buses, but buses are never going to break the speed limit. Like, because they have to stop and, you know,
they're going to be so slow.
But they could use this against you in a lot of ways. Like, so I think it's crap. And I'll put money on it that Apple and probably Android are doing it because they probably get paid for it.
Oh, I'm sure they get paid for it.
You know, it's like, oh, here's, it's your data. You made it. You created the data.
Can you imagine how much they are getting paid if police forces, local, state, federal, you know, want to buy this data?
Man. You know, the thing that makes me most livid, and I don't want to get too far off the topic here, but I'm going to anyways. The thing that makes me really livid about, you know, police efforts regarding speeding and other related, like, traffic incidents is that, you know, like, for instance, like, texting while driving. Yes, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't, you know, you should be on a hands-free device, all those other things. You know, first off, studies have proven that being hands-free versus just talking on a cell phone, you know, using, you know, holding it, it doesn't change your focus level that much.
You're still distracted.
All right. But they've also proven that it's not much different than talking to someone else in the car, with the exception that you have a second person in the car to sort of check you.
Or listening to the radio and
right.
concentrating on the words.
Yeah. There's a lot of different things that are similar. But what... You take all that into consideration, the fact, you know, regardless, say that it's true that it is more dangerous to talk on a phone versus talking to a person. We'll just assume that's true. If you look at all the statistics on automobiles, vehicle accidents have declined steadily since the 60s. They've declined in the last 10 years. So it's not a long-term phenomenon. It's also a short-term phenomenon. It's both. So you can't say, oh, yeah, it decreased over the last 60 years, but it's been increasing the last 10 years.
Since the invention of the cell phone.
Yeah. Okay, that's one point. Fatalities are down. Injuries are down, mainly because cars are safer. And seatbelt use and airbags have a lot to do with this. But also car design safety makes people safer. But there are less actual crashes, not per capita, total. So, like, our population is double what it was in 1950, or maybe more than double.
And we still have less crashes.
We still have less numerically, less crashes numerically. There were, like, you know, so many million crashes then. There's less now. People are more aware. Traffic safety devices are better. There's better signage. Brakes are better in cars. You know, there's everything's better, and people are more attuned to driving in general. So I've looked at this numerous ways. Every statistic says that cars and driving are way, way, way safer. And if you look at it per capita, it's even more so. Yet cell phone use is through the roof. Speeding is probably at an all-time high. I mean, I'd say because cars are more powerful, can go a lot more faster than they used to be able to.
And you don't even realize when they are going that fast.
Yeah, I mean, they're so comfortable. There's no bumps. I mean, this hysteria around automobile, you know, safety is unwarranted. I understand there's a need to be safe, but it has gotten better since the 60s. Every year, year over year.
It's clear technology is the scapegoat.
Yeah.
The people in charge do not understand it, and this is a problem because they don't understand it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll ask anyone out there who thinks different, you can write me an email or write it to Kevin or whatever and show me the data. I have looked at the data. I've looked at the National Transportation Safety Board data. I've looked at every source of it across the internet, and it all points to safer highways, safer cars, less accidents, less deaths, and less injuries. So, and 400% more cell phone usage than in 2001.
Right.
So, end of rant.
Yeah, I think old age causes more accidents than cell phone usage.
You're probably right.
I'm not joking.
Well, I mean, young drivers aren't aren't, you know, new drivers, like 16.
Oh, brand new, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a problem there, too. They've shown that there's definitely an age range that are better at driving. And, I mean, I've had my fair share of accidents, but you know, none of them were due to texting or phone. They were due to, like, just poor traffic conditions, start and stop traffic.
Right.
People riding bumpers, that sort of stuff, you know. So it happens to everybody, but in general, across the population, it's way down.
Yeah, and it's not the fault of cell phones.
No.
So our next story is something that a lot of people might not care about, but as far as the education industry goes, this is pretty big. Novell has been sold to a company called Attachmate, or maybe... Is this one of those words that I just don't know how to say? Is it like attachmate?
I think it's just attachmate. I have never heard of attachmate.
I have never heard of them either.
I don't know who this is.
But, you know, for those of you who don't know, you know, Microsoft has basically come on the scene with their tool called Active Directory, and that is their way of centralizing user accounts and data and things like that so that you know, everybody can have one username and password and log in with it anywhere. So it makes resources on a network a lot easier. Well, Novell did this a long time before Microsoft did, but it's been my opinion, because I have administered Novell, that it has always sucked.
Yeah, it's awful.
Problem with it sucking is that lots of educational institutions still use them.
Yeah.
For their centralized logon and everything.
The only thing worse than Novell is Banyan Vines.
I remember you saying about that before. I've never used that.
If you've ever used Banyan Vines, please shoot me an email so we can, you know,
reminisce
and share.
If you've ever used it, let us know. If you have Skype, we will get you on the show.
Yeah, I'd like to hear someone else's opinion of Banyan Vines.
Yeah, so I am keeping my fingers crossed that Attachmate will crush Novell and all of their products and stop support on them, so that everybody who uses Novell will have to stop using Novell and start using something that is better. I mean, everybody who listens to this show knows that I am not at all a Microsoft fan. But when it comes to Novell or Microsoft for centralized login, you better believe I'm picking Microsoft every day of the week. Have you had any experience with Novell or heard anything more about this sale?
Well, I mean, I have. I'd set up, you know, several back in my tech support days, or, you know, technician days. I did a lot of Novell stuff, and I've never liked it. It was not intuitive and more complicated, and it was very, like, cumbersome to get the third party tools to integrate with operating systems.
It was the most unintegrated thing ever.
Yeah. The one thing is the Novell server was sort of its own thing. Like, it didn't need Windows or anything, which was kind of nice.
Right. It was an operating system.
Right. So back in the day, you know, when servers were expensive, you know, it was nice you didn't have to buy a Windows server operating system. But I think this is why, honestly, I think Novell is the reason that Windows got into the server business, is because Novell had a huge market at the time. And, I mean, paled in comparison to today's market. But, you know, Windows was able to, like, really encroach in on that. Like, I don't know that if you look at market share total, and I'm probably not an expert on this. I'm not, but I would guess that if you look at, like, the server market share in, like, 1995, 90, not like 91 through 96, that time frame, that Novell had a pretty huge, like, small network market share, like anything like between 5 and, you know, 100 clients, something like that. And Linux and Unix, mostly Unix, probably had a pretty big share of, like, the really large network systems. Microsoft ate all of the Novell's market share.
That's pretty much true.
And a really big portion of Unix's. You know, not all of it, but a really big portion.
Yeah, it pretty much ate the portion that was client-side.
Well, that too, I mean.
Well, I mean, because, you know, as far as Unix or Linux is concerned, that's a server operating system, whether you use it for a client or not. So, you know,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, client software.
Right, right.
Yeah, there was no room. After, you know, Windows for Workgroups came out, and, you know, NT server and all that stuff, that basically cannibalized all of the third-party tools out there. It's interesting. Like, so many people talk about, like, browsers, like how Microsoft, you know, had a lot of antitrust in the browser realm. I'd say there was way more antitrust in the networking aspects of Windows, because they, you know, there was actually companies making a lot of money at networking Windows computers in the early 90s.
Right, because it wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, no one made money from browsers, no one. Even in the beginning, like, I mean, Netscape made some money, but they never made much from it. Not anywhere near what Novell made. So, you know, there was, I think in terms of antitrust, there might have been more in that arena. And no one said a word about it.
Well, did people even know what antitrust was back then?
I mean, I think people knew. I just don't think people realized, like, these software companies were sort of like the, you know, the railroad tycoons of the 21st century. Yeah.
And it was early days, too, so not many people knew what this quote-unquote networking operating system stuff was.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it just kind of flew under the radar.
Yeah, I mean, relatively speaking, I guess the market was pretty small back then in comparison to everything else.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that Novell goes away, because I hate
it. I have no love for them. I don't really care.
Hate. So our next story comes from Read Write Web. Apparently, there is going to be a new service called Knock Knock. Now, this is not going to affect me because I don't use Foursquare. But for all of you out there who use Foursquare, this might be a very cool tool, because I'm sure everybody has talked about it at one time. Why can't I search Foursquare and see, you know, where the most amount of people are in location to where I'm at right now? You know, whatever. Foursquare really doesn't let you correlate data. Knock Knock taps into Foursquare and does that. So you can log into Knock Knock and see, oh, look at that. There's like 1,000 people 5 miles from me. I'm going there. You know, a couple hours later in the night, oh, there's only 500 people here, but there's 2,000 down the street. Oh, I'm going there.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's going to be a really cool service for one of two things. One, finding out where the party is at, or two, finding out where all the geeks are.
Yeah.
And that's what the article points out. You know, this could be good or bad, that you're either going to find a lot of people that you want to hang out with, or you're just going to find a lot of geeks using their cell phones.
Yeah, I saw this and I'm like, oh, this is a cool idea, because there's, you know, in my younger days, it's like, well, hey, where's everybody at? Especially in like more rural areas, like where are people hanging out? What are people doing? You know, I think it's kind of a neat idea.
Oh, I totally agree.
Now, and the thing I read is they're only going to launch it in a couple cities, I guess, like San Francisco, New York, L.A.,
Hong Kong, Bangkok.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Well, I guess, I mean, maybe there's more use of it over there. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people there.
I mean, I just thought it was weird that they went offshore. You know, for an American company, you thought it would have been easier for them to just deploy it here.
Yeah.
Although I guess the internet has no country.
Nope.
Do you plan on using Knock Knock once it comes out?
I don't think I will. I mean, because, you know, I mean, I have Foursquare, and I, you know, I mess around with it a little bit. I'm not sure the whole checking in thing is like all that cool. It's something I mess with. It's just, you know, it's like I try everything a little bit just to see what it's like. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think maybe I'll give it a try, but I don't see a reason to.
Yeah. I've never been a big fan of the whole check-in thing. Like, whenever I go places, I'll tweet out, hey, I'm going to the South Side, or hey, I'm going here. That's good enough for me.
Yeah.
I don't need to do Facebook places or Foursquare check-ins.
I mean, I can remember being in my 20s, you know, and living in, you know, in a city at one time, a bigger city than I do now, and kind of wondering, hey, where's everybody? And I can envision the use for this. Like, people just want to go where the party's at. It's something, you know, people in their like 20s want to do.
College age
and early to mid 20s. It's that age where, you know, you're always hanging out, and I see a market for it. I was like, hey, that's a great idea when I read it. I don't think I would use it, but I'm 33, so.
So you're not hanging out anymore.
No, not really.
So our next article is kind of we always bash on Facebook, and seems that there's something. I mean, this really doesn't affect anybody, really, unless you're a big-time celebrity. But apparently, anybody can submit a DMCA takedown request to Facebook, and Facebook just takes it down. So if I didn't like Microsoft's Facebook page, I could just submit a DMCA request and say, hey, they're stealing my proprietary content. Take them down. Facebook won't verify that they have stolen my content. They won't verify that I'm a real person. They won't verify that the email I used was a real email. They'll just take it down.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're not doing any type of verification at all.
Yes, I mean, there's really not much more to say about this story other than, you know, way to go, Facebook. But I wanted to point it out just because it's to keep showing that, you know, every week Facebook kind of does something bad.
Well, I think it points out Facebook really needs a competitor. I mean, unfortunately, we almost need like some kind of like social networking standard where there's multiple networks and you can be part of one network and deal with their, you know, whatever their restrictions, rules, laws, whatever are, and then still communicate with people on other networks. You know, still subscribe to their feeds, still subscribe to their data, you know, their updates, their posts, whatever. Because otherwise, we're going to be beholden to what Facebook decides.
I think we already are.
Well, we are, but it doesn't, it, you know, this is somewhere where we might need to see some government regulation relate, or at least, I don't know how you fix this.
We'll have the social media czar.
I don't want to see that, but I don't know how you fix this because what you really, I mean, think about email, okay? Obviously, email was invented well before the internet was, you know, as popular as it is today.
What we know of the internet.
Right, and everybody just kind of like said, oh, this is how email works, and here's how we're going to use it, and it's a, you know, it's a tertiary service. It sits on top of the IP layer.
It has a standard, and other people can choose to implement that standard.
Right. I mean, there's nothing inherent about even, what, TCP or IP that say that you can use an SMTP server or an IMAP server. These are just services that ride on top of TCP IP.
Right. Totally separate layers.
Yeah, it's in the application layer, I guess. But anyway, you know, that this is something we might need for social networking. We might need a social networking standard, sort of like, I would equate it almost to like RSS, which right. I don't even know if that's an official like internet standard or anything, but
I think it is.
But that's an example of how we might interface, that you would just basically subscribe to a user's social network feed. It might be implemented through some modified version of RSS, and you know, you just type in their email address and or whatever it is, it's their identifier.
And RSS is actually a good example because that started out as just like one browser's idea of how to get, quote unquote, a feed. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it became a standard.
Right. Well, that's how a lot of things work. You know, somebody writes an RFC and it makes a standard. I mean, I would really impose upon the community out there to make some sort of standard. You know, Google could go a long way here in sort of setting the standard for this. Because it still allows them to, like, because they're all about being able to mine and search the data. If people are putting feeds out there, they're still able to do this. You know, they're still able to mine the data and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I would love Google to do that, but it seems like they've already had, like, three chances at this. They have Orkut, which only is used in Brazil. It's a social network. You know, they have Google Profile, which, while it's new, nobody really uses it. And they have Buzz, which is a Twitter competitor, but Twitter and Facebook, you know, Facebook stole Twitter's idea, so they're pretty much very similar services. So it seems like Google had three failed attempts in the social networking realm.
Well, you know, I would say maybe they're going about it wrong. You know, maybe they're going about it as like, oh, we're going to be a competitor to such and such, when really
they need to be an aggregator or a...
Or just a catalyst to start a new... this new standard, like, you know, similar to email.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
so get Google and their money behind making a real standard.
Right. And then, hey, Google, like, or, you know, this is Google's talking, like, hey, Microsoft, sign on to our system, or Apple, sign on to our system. You know, and then you have the three big players, and you basically either force Facebook into using your standard or being completely separate and probably becoming marginalized.
Oh, that's... I don't even see that working, though. I mean, that makes perfect sense from a company standpoint and from a people who know technology standpoint. But the only way that will work is if you get the users to move.
Well, right.
And everybody who isn't a technology person only knows Facebook. They love Facebook no matter how many times they screw them over. and getting Facebook to move to something else and move all of their pictures and move all of their stuff and all of their friends, that's not going
to
be easy.
Then that might be the where the, you need government regulation, similar to like the AT&T legislation in the 80s where they broke up AT&T.
Ma Bell.
You know, at some point, you just have to say, look, you've taken advantage of the market in such a way that we feel you're hurting competition. And I would say that's definitely true.
Oh, they clearly are.
Yeah, I mean,
there is no competition.
There's very little competition in the social networking market right now.
I can't even tell you the name of another social network.
MySpace.
Okay. I guess that's how bad it is now that I didn't even think of MySpace.
Yeah, I mean, no one does anymore.
I mean, they're still around and they're still big, especially in the music realm. But
didn't Google own a good part of MySpace at one time?
Somebody bought a lot of their stock. Like, I thought it was a majority share.
Yeah. I mean, the interface is, you know, the interface is sort of like what, you know, it's, I think it's independent. Like, people like different interfaces. They might like Facebook. They might like Google Profiles. They might like that Orkut thing or Okrit or whatever it's called. Or MySpace.
Oh, News Corp.
News Corp owns them.
They're the ones with the majority share of MySpace.
They own Fox, don't they?
They own a lot of people.
Well, anyway, this is what needs to happen or it'll fail. I mean, we'll basically be beholden to Facebook or it's just going to be... I mean, well, that'll be what it'll... That's the end result. We'll be beholden to Facebook.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we're already at that point and nobody's gonna try.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's going to try to make a competing service. Nobody's going to try to make the arena better. They're just going to try to make their product. Oh, well, we'll see what happens.
I mean, maybe somebody could write an app for Facebook that supported this, like, protocol. And then you could install the app in your Facebook account, sort of, like, make your Facebook account dormant, and that would give you access to the data on Facebook that you normally would be accustomed to on this other network. That's the only way I could see them, like, sort of tearing Facebook apart from the inside out.
Right.
But, yeah, anyway.
Maybe we need to contact some people and say, hey, get on this, because they'll listen to us.
Well, if no one else is working on... I mean, I can't believe that I'm the only person that's thought of this.
Yeah, somebody's got to be thinking of this. It's probably out there and ready to go, and they just have the big red button that says kill Facebook on it. And when they press it, it's over. So there's actually been some breaking news in the past couple days. The article we have here is a couple days old. And that is, remember the whole PlayStation Network data breach where, you know, access to credit cards and everything.
What breach?
Oh, you haven't heard? I was under the impression that everybody had heard.
I hadn't heard anything.
Bird.
The bird is the word. I heard about it.
Yeah, so... Sony got sued for it. Of course, everybody knew that was going to happen.
Oh, I mean...
Whenever you have the probability of 75 million credit cards being exposed, somebody's going to sue. And it turns out a lot of people sued. Well, here's one thing that just happened in the past couple days. And I know, Ryan, you brought up something that just happened today, I believe. But this happened... This was a Supreme Court decision where people can now not sue companies like Sony, no matter what they do, because they are putting in the terms of service that everybody just clicks OK to, you're not allowed to sue us. That made it the whole way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, OK, good deal. We allow it. So now, you know, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm pretty sure in the future, every company is going to put this in their terms of service so that nobody can be sued anymore.
Well, the thing about contract law is that the people that write the contract are always on point to prove the negative, like to prove it, you know, that the customer understood this, they were fully aware of it, that we weren't violating any laws when we wrote it. It's the burden of proof is always on the writer of the contract. So even, I mean, I don't know about this Supreme Court decision, but I mean, these suits are going to happen as long as they hold data and don't hold it securely. I mean, I don't know. Like, I wonder what the precedent would be in the non-electronic world. Like, say 1985, somebody breaks into American Express headquarters and steals...
Steals their filing cabinets.
Steals their filing cabinets, or as many files as they can gather. And part of the problem is that they don't even know which files they stole because they had access to all of them. Has that happened in the past? Is there a precedent? If the person was able to successfully sue American Express in 1985 for something like that, hypothetically, I think the same is true today.
It should be exactly the same. Electronic or not, it's the same
right.
deal.
You have the same responsibility, whether the electronic records are electronic or physical, to protect them. And if you don't, you've opened yourself to the same liabilities if they were non-electronic.
And it's even easier nowadays to protect them because you couldn't encrypt folders, you know, pieces of paper with handwriting on them. You
right.
can't encrypt that.
Right.
So now it's even easier for Sony to protect this data, and they clearly didn't.
Right.
You know, some people were even saying that the data wasn't even encrypted.
Right.
You know, it's just out there, database, they got it, done. This, all I can say is I am glad that I did not have my credit card on the PSN because I don't use it enough to actually buy games. And so
I think this is going to make people more wary when they associate with a company. And I mean, I like Sony. I have some of their products. I really like some of the stuff that I have of theirs. But I have to say, when a company takes aggressive action against its users, you're going to have people that when they hear stories like this, where they get attacked for it, they're going to second guess their use of that company's e-services. They're going to be like, do I really want this company to have, you know, my data? Or they may call that company up and say, you know what, delete my account. I want you to delete all my data. You know, I know there's issues with that too, but it's an interesting problem.
Yeah, and if that doesn't make you, you know, not want to associate with a company when something like that happens, did you hear about what Sony is telling people about their credit cards? They're telling them, don't cancel your credit cards. Just put a fraud alert on them. Now, maybe that's good enough, but people who steal these credit cards, they know what they're doing. You know, they're not idiots to be able to do this. I am canceling my credit card if it gets stolen. Done.
Right. Well, I mean, most of the credit card companies will stand behind their fraud systems. If they, you know, that if you put a fraud alert on it, basically, I think they call you for every transaction made. They do a lot more... investigative searches.
But isn't it only for like a certain amount of time? Like they're not going to call. I use my credit card all the freaking time. They're not going to call me every time indefinitely.
Right. But here's the thing. Once the credit card expires, you know, it's past the expiration date, then the data is invalid. Like the CVV code's invalid.
Right. But for me, that's like 2 years out.
Right. But as long as the fraud alert's that long, then I don't see a problem. Or just until they issue a new card. Once they issue a new card, you don't cancel your account. There's no reason to cancel your account. You just have them issue a new card.
That's what I meant. Not cancel your entire account. Cancel the card and get a new card.
Right.
Have them nullify the card.
I don't see anything wrong with having to do that.
No, I think that's what you should do. Like, okay. I don't trust the fraud alert enough. I would say get rid of the card, get a new one.
Right.
It strikes me that Sony is, you know, taking the kind of easy way out. Because a lot of people have Sony credit cards, so this is going to cost them a lot of money.
Yeah.
If they have to print 75 million Sony credit cards again.
And mail them, yeah. Yeah, right there you're talking like 30 million in postage.
That is ridiculous. So our next article, we have some phone articles.
Yeah, so Microsoft announced a pretty interesting tool. I found it interesting. You know, one of the things that to get any new development platform up and running is you need to get developers making applications for the development platform. And that's something that Windows Phone 7 has been admittedly lacking. They don't have a whole lot of interest in it. They have some interest. They have people developing applications for it. But in order to attract more developers, Microsoft released a tool that allows you to take iOS apps and... it will analyze the code from an iOS app and map the API calls in the iOS, you know, basically Xcode and Cocoa Touch and all that to the nearest equivalent, you know, API call in Windows Phone 7. So, you know, it basically jump starts the development. You know, it's like a way to sort of like dive into Windows Phone development.
Right. So this is kind of their way to immediately get 100,000 apps, you know, to jumpstart their store. Because they already know that there are apps for iOS out there. If we make it easy for people to port, bam.
Right. That's one way of doing it. You know, I think it's a great idea. I've seen some other third party tools that have come out for, you know, purposely built for Visual Studio that allow you to develop in C Sharp or a .NET language, which a lot of .NET developers would obviously be familiar with, for both Android and iOS. In the opposite way, I think that Microsoft should be, you know, pursuing that, maybe even directly supporting Objective-C or some, you know, close variant of it on their systems to allow developers to quickly port. Obviously, there's a lot of things, you know, the APIs are going to be very different.
Right.
But they can, if they could get, you know, 90, get, you know, like even like the 75% code reuse or something.
That's still good enough.
Yeah, I mean, for a very complicated application, it could make a big difference. I think it's a really smart move on their part.
Yeah, I would like to see what or how Apple responds to this. You know, because when porting tools have come out in the past, Apple has always said no. You know, Adobe comes out with their tool to port Flash to a native iPhone app. Apple puts that in their terms of service. You can't do that. So I know this is going in the opposite direction and Apple has no control over it, mm-hmm. but I'm interested to see if they try to control it. If they make Xcode do something ridiculous.
I mean, they could totally change the API of Xcode
to make it non-accessible from other apps.
Well, it wouldn't be a matter of making it non-accessible. It just means that all of the reverse engineering that Microsoft has done to null and void all the work that they've done so far.
Right.
So they'd have to do it again,
out a different way to do it.
Right, yeah. But that would just make all of the iOS developers pissed off too, because they would have to rewrite their apps for the next version of the iOS. So if you change the that's really the only they have right now.
I was just thinking of, I don't know how this porting app works, but if it makes a call to the Xcode application...
No. All it does is it's examining the Objective-C.
But where does it get that from? Does somebody copy and paste it? Or are you pointing it to a file?
Probably just copy and paste. You just take your code, open the Xcode file. I'm sure it's like, you know, it's stored in...
Just a text.
Like a .oc file for Objective-C or something.
Something, yeah.
Something like that. Like C# files or CS and C... C++ or .cpp files, you know. So they probably just open up the OC file. I haven't done any development in Objective-C, so I really don't know. But you open the file up, or you open it up on a Mac and you copy it into a text file, whatever. And then you put it into this tool, and it analyzes the code from an Objective-C standpoint and says, oh, he's making a call to this library that puts up an icon that's a touchable icon, and when you touch it, you know, it has these actions and whatnot. And we have a very similar object in the Windows Phone, or not object, but a very similar method or something in the Windows Phone API. And so we're going to automatically translate it to this call for you. And even if it doesn't, even if it just makes suggestions about like what to use, it really would help the developer.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, that's a total rewrite, you know, if you want to move from platform to platform.
Right.
It's not easy.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think Apple, you know, they're probably going to, they need to be defensive in some ways, because the tools like MonoTouch that actually fully support the Cocoa Touch API in Visual Studio, that's going to really it's going to encourage developers that are in the .NET world to stay in the .NET world and develop for both platforms. And if they're doing that, then every app that gets written in the future for iOS would also get written for Windows Phone, essentially.
Right.
And you know, there's some definite issues that they'll have.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what is the benefit of getting people to move to Xcode as their developing environment? Because... You know, from a a device standpoint, I don't care where you make the app as long as you're making it for my device. But then you just brought up the point that if you make it for one, it's also made for the other at the same time. So I guess that
nearly.
Is a benefit.
I mean, even with MonoTouch, so like say you get one of these sort of like these plugins for Visual Studio or whatever, and you develop them on MonoDroid or MonoTouch, and you target an Android phone or an iOS phone from a Microsoft tool like Visual Studio, you're still going to have problems. You know, you still have to do some work to port it then to Windows Phone 7 because you're using an API that isn't available on Windows Phone 7.
Right.
But it's going to make your job all that much easier because you're in a common language.
Now, here's the deal. Get the Mono people to integrate this Windows Phone 7 conversion tool into the Mono tool so that it does all that for you.
You know, MonoTouch, you mean?
Yeah. Well, whatever. MonoTouch, MonoDroid. So now it's like it's a two-step process. You develop a Visual Studio for the one, and then if you want it to work on Windows, then you have to do the Microsoft porting tool to try to port the APIs mm-hmm. over. So that's a two-step process. Get the Mono people to buy this porting tool, integrate it, so now it's a one-step process. You click one button, it saves it as the iOS native,
well,
and it does the porting to Windows for you.
I mean,
you.
The porting... I mean, the one thing they outline in the article on Microsoft's website is that there's not a one-to-one mapping of all the APIs. It's not perfect.
Well, right. But it does as much as it can for you with one right. click as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea. It simplifies the, you know, targeting. I mean, the thing is, though, I just know from my own work as a software developer, there are always gotchas. And there's some, you know, like, while you can do it this way, you're going to cause yourself all kinds of work and you have to follow this other scheme in this language or this that language or using this API or that API. So it's never, even if it does solve a lot of the code, porting a lot of the code, and even finding the API calls for you, there's still going to be challenges in the design of it, you know, especially those cases where it can't find something equivalent. So anyways, I thought it was cool. I think it's an interesting attempt on Microsoft to win back some developers.
Yeah, I hope we see some articles soon of people using this. You know,
yeah.
I would love to see somebody make a blog post of a side-by-side comparison. Here's the app I made for iOS with Xcode, and here are my results of the process running it through the porting tool, and here's what I had to do to make it work.
Yeah.
And somebody's got to do
the way,
something like that.
I read an interesting article. It sort of reminds me of this thing. I actually read it. It was just today or yesterday. There's a blog I go to. It's johnstownhistory.blogspot.com or something like that. And they had a picture of somebody moving a house. And the comment was, you know, sometimes it's just cheaper to move a well-built house than rebuild it from scratch in a new location. And that's really the trade-off you have here with one of these tools is it cheaper for me to port it, essentially, move the code from one platform to another versus recode it from scratch?
Right.
And that's really the comparison we need to see because it might be that it really is so easy to develop in Windows Phone 7 that rebuilding it from scratch is not that big a deal anyways. And I would almost say that if Microsoft could prove that, you know, in some way, they might even gain more developers because, like, oh, look how awesome our development environment is. And, I mean, I really like .NET, so I think they may have a horse in that race, you know, to say, hey, I mean, I think hands down it's the best IDE out there.
Oh, yeah. As far as development goes, I would choose Visual Studio over anything.
Yeah. You know, so if they, you know, and the language, I mean, all the CLR languages, they're great. So I think, you know, if they could just demonstrate, hey, here's this, like, app that's super popular on iPhone. We rebuild it in, you know, half the time that it
right.
took to develop.
5 minutes.
Well, not 5 minutes, but you get my point.
Right, right.
So... But that's the constant thing that you have to do is weigh, is it cheaper to move the house or rebuild it?
Yep. So we talked a little bit, actually a lot, about the whole Apple location fiasco. And we have a couple articles this week about it. Our first article is actually a patent application that Apple put in. And it is how they plan to use their location services. And the article from Gawker, you know, Apple patent reveals extensive stalking plans. And if you read through the patent application to see the things they talk about, it's not a duh moment. It's more of a, holy crap, I didn't think about that moment. You know, because we were talking about, yeah, they know where you're at. They track your data. Well, this goes into more detail, like, yes, they know where you're at, but they also know when you made a call, where you were when you made a call. They also know where you were when you made a text. They also know where you were when you opened Twitter. They also know where you were when you took a camera phone picture. You know, so it lists out all of these detailed things that you just didn't think about before that they're tracking. And we had talked before about, you know, why are they keeping this database of multiple years of location info? If you scroll down to the bottom of this article, they have the scanned-in version of the patent application. And page 3 is actually a flowchart of how that location tracking database is supposed to work. And it is supposed to work the way, Ryan, you said you thought it should have worked. It should be a fixed-size database. When it's full, it drops off one from the end and adds to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly they... I don't know whether they thought about this before.
See, they still store in the patent, though. They still mention time. You know, if you look at
there's still time.
They have the transmitter ID and the time
and the timestamp.
And I still think they're silly for storing this time data. Like, I guess it benefits them for sure, but in terms of privacy, anonymity, everything else, tracking a user, a specific user especially, the time data is what is really telling about any data they collect. I mean, it basically, it's like a, you know, that like that article I sent you from Zeit.com.
Oh, the German one.
Yeah, this German politician gave his data up to this German newspaper, I think Zeit.
Willingly,
yeah. He said, hey, I want you to see what you can find with my data. And they were able to like basically replay a timeline of him like moving about the country whilst he was traveling over different weeks and, you know, taking the train from one place to another. And they were able to then associate this with freely available data on Twitter, you know, based on Twitter's timestamps.
They checked his Twitter. They checked his Facebook post.
Yeah. And they were able to associate exactly what he was doing at that moment. And I just think there's no reason to keep this timestamp data. It doesn't help them do what they intend to do. And that is locating you on a map quickly. All it really helps them do is track you.
Right. What do they call that? A hot find? The way that they get a quick fix before they get the real GPS fix? There's a term for that.
I'm not exactly sure. Yeah. I guess it would be, I would call it a cold, like almost like a cold thing, like where your GPS is cold in the sense that the GPS is booting up and it's trying to get your fix.
Right.
But in the meantime, we want to get you at least
here's
an approximation. Oh, you're attached to this tower and that tower had this lat long.
Yeah.
So you're within, you know, 3,000 meters of the tower.
Right.
But the storing of the time data is what really makes this, you know, reusable by the wrong people.
And let's turn it around and say usable by the right people. If you scroll down to page 4 of this patent application, you can see they're planning on adding a new app to the phone called Location History. It's item 303 in the patent application. And when you open that, it basically gives you what those third-party tools that we talked about last week, the link in the article to when you download the app, it will read through your iTunes backup and show you on a map where you were at what time. Well, that is now going to be in the phone. That is going to be an app in the phone to show you where you're at. And they even show when you click on a pin, it shows you this location at this time. So it seems like they think this time data is going to be more convenient for people than we think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, I hope they're not storing that time-based data. Because like I said in a post elsewhere, somebody else was, you know, talking about how Apple uses this data or whether they use it. If there are, even if they're using an anonymizer, I don't know how they're doing it. Maybe they anonymize the phone every so often, every hour, like whatever ID number they send up with all these records. So they come up with some anonymous ID number. first of all, nothing's truly anonymous if it's random. You know, if somebody could reverse engineer their salt algorithm or their seed and how they come up with that random number, they could still get it. They could still get at the original data. Hopefully it's, you know, theoretically, I guess if it's a perfect one-way hash, there's no way to get that.
Yeah, there really are no perfect ones. So.
But it means hopefully they would get to something very, very unsolvable.
Right.
But even if it is that way, if they only do it in like 12-hour increments, they would still be able to track you in a 12-hour window if they got access to the database. Because, and it's not even that they know it's you, but they can track that specific user. They can say, oh, this user went through this path. And if somebody else has third-party knowledge about you, they could associate you to that path. For instance, at some point it shows you going to your work, okay? Well, your employer knows your name and where you work. So if they see a path and where you live, if they see a phone, if they saw a data path of you leaving your workplace and going to this address at, say, 5:30.
They now know that anonymous hash is you.
Is most likely you. You know, so there's still ways to get at the data if a third party has additional information. And I think those third parties are they're going to want, are not necessarily your employer, but somebody that has that data is going to be the one that wants to get at your data, like where you went. So it really needs to not have time based data, and it really shouldn't store any kind of common ID with each record.
Well, our next article talks about moving in the right direction, and that is in a future update, they're A, going to fix the size of the database. It's going to be, you know, small. It's going to kick out the old entries.
I saw something about like 7 days or something.
Something like that. And they're also going to encrypt the cache.
That definitely goes a long way.
Help, yeah.
It's going to help on the phone. I still wonder what's getting stored up in the cloud.
Right. Because, I mean, encryption is basically, you know, two-way. So they can encrypt it on the phone, and then once it gets to the servers, they'll decrypt it to store their data. So yeah, even though it's encrypted, are they going to be sending more telling information now that it's encrypted? And I mean, you would think that would be the case. You know, that's the reason for encrypting stuff, so you can send sensitive data.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that not only are they going to send time and location, maybe they're also going to send whatever that IEMI number is, you know, the unique number for your phone. Maybe even your account settings, because, you know, at least on SIM card phones, those are stored along with it. So I guess we have to wait until the next iOS update to see exactly how Apple fixes these things. But that might not be until quite later on. We'll see, though. But we also have an issue with the new white iPhone.
What? Yeah, and actually this might be a little bit of a retraction. They didn't post an update to the Engadget story. Initially, Engadget was reporting that the white iPhone was slightly thicker, about half the width of a, I think it was a 0.5 pencil lead, 0.5 millimeter pencil lead they had on top of the two, and it had a little gap. I think they were saying it was maybe like 0.37 millimeters thicker. They confirmed in their article that it was tough to get it into one of the cases that were custom designed for the original iPhone 4.
And I've heard that from other sources too.
Right. And I happened to saw a story elsewhere that now their Consumer Reports is claiming that they've measured it and it is not thicker than the black one. And these are basic design tolerances differences that you're seeing.
Ah.
Or I'm sorry, manufacturing tolerances.
So they just must have got one that happened to not fit together as well as the other one did.
Right. So I'd say this is still up in the air. The article on MSNBC talks about Consumer Reports measuring these with, like, you know, special calipers. Engadget, you know, hasn't put a retraction up or an update to their story. But anyway, it's something to consider. If you're buying a case, you might want to shop around or try them before you buy the case.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if it is actually thicker, because it would make sense if they're using, you know, a white plastic for the device. You know, if it is white, it's going to be more translucent than black, so it makes sense that they would have to make it slightly thicker so that you couldn't see through it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the original problem that people were saying is that, oh, you know, it's delayed because the white area around the flash, the light leaked through the white plastic. It didn't just come through the hole where the flash is supposed to be. So that's the reason for the delay, blah, blah, blah. But I actually think that has some merit just because, you know, white, I mean, I don't care. You go to the store, you go to Lowe's or something, and you buy thick white plastic containers or something.
They're light, still slightly translucent.
Yeah, light shines through it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that makes sense that they would have to make it thicker so that the flash wouldn't come through, so that the light of the screen wouldn't leak out around.
Here's what I don't get. Why are people so, like hyped up on these white iPhones?
Dude, I love it. I bought a white iPad. As soon as the white 3GS came out, I bought the white. I wanted a white iPhone 4.
Yeah.
It's different.
I don't know. I mean, I know they make a lot of their products white. I used to have an iPod back when they were white. And then when the iPod, I don't know, Classic came out.
Yeah.
It had like a silver metal case, and I was like, whatever.
Yeah, for me, it's more of a I don't like black thing. You know, in terms of clothes, you don't see me with many black t-shirts or black anything. I just don't like dark colors. I don't like dark. Yeah. So whenever, you know, something not black comes out, I'm going to buy that over black every time. Yeah. It just so happens to be white, the only choice. So have you seen anything else happening this week?
No, not really. I mean, I did see a few stories related to Sony. They said that now, like, I guess Sony Entertainment Online was also possibly hacked and maybe put another, like, 26 million users' credit and card info out there.
So would that be the music portion of them or, like, the Sony-style website portion of them?
I think – I'm not sure. I'm not sure what all SEO is over top of, but – it probably is a music and like in other game systems or something, maybe like the PlayStation Go or something.
So I guess basically what we can say is that just to be safe, if you've bought anything from Sony, check your credit cards.
If you've bought anything from Sony in the last 20 years, you should burn all your credit cards, change your name.
Yes. Witness protection, figure out how you can get in that.
All of that. Talk to Geohot.
Yeah, definitely talk to him. So, I believe that is it for episode 33 of the Slongcast. As usual, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. My username is Slongcack. Ryan, where can people go to find you?
You can find me at www.lancipedia.com or on Twitter at @RyanLancy.
And as always, if you want us to talk about an article, just bookmark it on Delicious or whatever it's going to be called next week. You can bookmark it as Slongcast034, and we will make sure to give our 2 cents on the topic. And until next time, dovidzhenya!